You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Welcome to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. I am your favorite fat boy, Big Daddy Liberty, and you're listening to this on Hi FM. It will be, of course, simulcast on the Big Daddy Liberty Show, and of course, the podcast will be available on my channel and, of course, on the Hi FM website. Guys, welcome to the show. I have a jam-packed show for you today, a special guest, a voice you have heard before, someone I hope will provide some fantastic analysis as I ask the question in today's major segment. Is the social and economic pressure beginning to break the petty politics of the lockdown in particular? Is it beginning to break the back of it? So we're going to have that conversation with Mpiake Dlamini from the Free Market Foundation at just in about 10 or so minutes, less than 10 minutes actually. We're going to have that conversation. But before that, as always on the BDL show, we look at the news week that was. You know, what made the news for you? What maybe got you interested or got you angry? If you do follow my show and my channel on social media, you'll know that I've been putting out vlogs where I've been particularly angry. Vlog 27 in particular has gone a little bit viral, where I basically ask the question, are we not giving up our rights and our freedoms as South Africans? Are we not giving up our rights and freedoms as South Africans to basically see politicians make weird and at times even asinine decisions that don't make sense? Surely, dear South African, at some point you've got to draw the line. And I asked you in vlog 27, that's exactly where do you draw the line? So it's these and many issues that I think I'll be chewing the fat on today. Welcome to it. If you've just joined us on the Big Daddy Liberty Show, remember it is a Friday, which means it is the BDL show. The show will be available on Chai FM and of course will be podcasted later on the Big Daddy Liberty Show. So you can look out for that and I'll give you information a bit later. So I've just been told by my producer that there's no ad break. So I'm going to go straight into it, you know. What's been making the headlines for you? What's been on your mind? I'll tell you what's on my mind. And let me perhaps begin at what I would like to argue is the biggest non-issue this week. And that was the president, of the Republic, Cyril Ramaphosa, you know, basically addressing the nation. And, you know, 2 days after it, I'm not entirely sure I know what exactly of substance was said in this. And it would have been interesting and quite nice if we could get a government spokesperson from the presidency on this. And I'll maybe try and do that for next week. But, you know, aside from telling people that, you know, level 3 of the lockdown will commence at the end of May, and even then it sounded like there was a big maybe attached to that. The rest of the speech seemed to be more an attempt by the president to respond to public criticisms about the lockdown. And not only public criticisms, but even challenges now that are going, being directed at him by various law firms and civil society and interest groups. So he seemed to go on the back foot. It seemed to be an apologetic display by the president, and gone are the days, by the looks of it, of the tough talking, you know, sort of very confident and sure of himself president who then has sort of ministers contradict him. And maybe that has something to do with it, you know. Can a president who's being openly contradicted by his would-be rival in a previous elective conference at a party political level then come out and at a state level be as confident as he should be when he knows his rival is essentially the Minister of Culture, for instance, a one Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma? Of course, this is just pure analysis on that particular announcement, because it did leave a lot of South Africans sort of saying, what exactly is the president telling us here? You know, what's the substance here, aside from quoting FDR and, you know, a whole host of waffle at the end, which seemed a little confusing more than anything else? Was it an attempt to pacify citizens, to which we've seen a growing anger develop across all income groups in this country, from, you know, poorer residents who are taking to the streets in protest or we've seen a looting of shops, for example, as the effects of the grinding poverty that comes from this lockdown begin to bite, in particular in that part of our country, to the middle class in this country, who are ever increasingly, you know, as I say in Vlog 27, people are finding the bass in their voice, so to speak, to begin to push back against some of the really illogical parts of the lockdown. So, as I called it, that particular speech by the president this week, the address, if you will, was a bit of a nothing burger, which is ironic because the president is the chairperson of McDonald's South Africa. So it was a little ironic that he delivered a nothing burger to the citizens of this country. But I don't know. What do you think? You know, maybe hit me up on social media. My social media is up at the moment, so you can send me a comment if you're listening via my Big Daddy Liberty Facebook page or even on Twitter. Just search at Big Daddy Liberty and let me know what you thought about that particular speech. Speaking about level three, it seems as though level three, if it does come, will now be segmented and fragmented into an almost district level, where the argument is, as we hear from government, that those areas with the most cases, blah, 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 will likely remain on level four, and maybe the rest of the country will see level three, in what they call hotspots. Not sure how they'll police that, but maybe that also gives insight then as to why the president, deployed an additional, or the entire army basically. Is that perhaps why we're seeing that sort of show of force, on the streets? Will it be to literally, police the now different types of, lockdown in the country? Again, these are questions that I was left with when I looked at the Newsweek. Maybe you're thinking about that too. Are you worried perhaps about the number of army that are now going to be hitting the streets? What does that mean for us and our freedoms? What does that mean for us and the rule of law? You know, soldiers are not police officers. And given how police officers have been acting throughout this lockdown, you know, maybe even referring to them being on the streets right now to enforce this is not a good idea. I mean, if you've been watching my channel, again, you would have seen the vlog I did on you know, the Belito case, a father who literally had to grab his child who was being manhandled by the police. That same municipality, by the way, the Guadalupe municipality, then later comes out and says, no, even though everybody saw, you know, the confrontation in a viral video, that what you did see was not the case of manhandling. So, yet a lot of people scratching their heads. You know, on what basis does a police officer, in that case a municipal police officer of the Guadalupe municipality in Belito, on what basis are they allowed to just grab a child? These are questions I think a lot of South Africans are beginning to ask as the anger perhaps wells in a lot of us who are really complying with the government's request for us to stay at home, that why then do the actions of that same state seem to be firmly placing families in the crosshairs, bringing harm and humiliation and essentially violence onto South African families. Again, none of this is hyperbole. There is a record of history and actual hard evidence that backs up what's happening at the moment, that there's been violence perpetuated against South Africans under the name of this lockdown. These are questions that we need to begin to ask as these news headlines hit us on a day-to-day basis. With the biggest one I would contend, which definitely got me riled up at least, was the Minister of Trade and Industry, Ibrahim Patel, this week promulgating regulations under this state of disaster, which basically now literally regulates what South Africans can and cannot wear. So the very clothing on your back is now literally regulated by the state under this lockdown. You're being told what you can and cannot buy as articles of clothing. For instance, if you bought a t-shirt, one which may be, you know, like the one you're wearing right now, that would very much be illegal under the current regulations. Unless, of course, the retailer openly states that you're buying this t-shirt because it's meant to be an undergarment for winter. I mean, can this get any more insane? Can this actually get any more insane than that? Like, at what point, as I asked this week on my show, at what point do you draw the line and say, I'm sorry, but in a free society, in an open society, politicians do not get the power to decide what you can and can't wear. At what point do you actually take a moment, regardless of race, and I made this point explicit on my show, that none of this is said on the basis of, oh, you're defending white South Africans or black South Africans or Indians or colors. That's all irrelevant to me. You're all South Africans, and all of us as South Africans are entitled to liberties and rights that are literally been, have literally been hard fought for. Many people even dying for them. So I'm sorry, dear fellow South African, at some point you've got to ask the question of what does liberty mean for you? It's one thing for Big Daddy to come on radio once a week and, you know, have a show throughout the week, the vlogs and the Big Daddy Liberty Show on Wednesdays to talk about these things. But to you, internally, what does it mean to you and your family to live in a free society? And how do you defend that is the question I asked. This morning you have surfers, or actually for the past week, and even longer, you've had surfers all over the country, Komaki being a good example, who've literally just flouted the rules and said, look, this stuff doesn't make sense. I don't see how I'm spreading COVID by going out and surfing any more than I would be if I did have it going to the supermarket to shop. Like, these are questions that I think South Africans are right to ask as they basically stamp their authority as citizens to say, no. In a free society, I am the one in control of what happens here, not the politicians. Food for thought. And with that being said, what else did make me news? I note that the South African Airways has finally released its financials for the past 2 years. And sure enough, the numbers are just mind-boggling. The SAA over the last 2 years has essentially lost 10.5 billion rand. So each year they were making a loss essentially of about 5 billion rand. And this is the same airline that we're now looking to resuscitate, even though the business rescue practitioners themselves, who were mandated by the state to go in there and look at whether the airline is viable or not, and if it isn't, to, you know, dismantle that behemoth of a monster that literally sucks up tax funds to fly mostly middle-class individuals. Poor people don't really benefit from there being an SAA. And we see this in them now reporting that over the last 2 years, because these financials, by the way, if you're wondering why this is so important, the SAA hadn't released its financial results for the past 2 years, flouting all sorts of laws and regulations. And now we know why, to a large extent. Not only is it in a shambolic state of administration, but they're losing money like there's no tomorrow. And maybe as a final thought before I go to my first break, and after the break, I'm going to have Mpiyati Dlamini. That 10.5 billion rand I'm talking about, to put it into perspective, the COVID fund, the National COVID Fund, only has about 2 billion rand in it. That's crazy numbers. Anyway, after the break, I'm going to have Mpiyati Dlamini from the Free Market Foundation. We're going to unpack some of these big issues and ask the question, is the social and economic pressure beginning to break, if you will, the petty politics of the lockdown? That's the question I'm asking after the break. I'll see you after the short messages.
You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Alrighty, everybody, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. As I said before the break, I have a very special guest, someone who I have a fantastic friendship with. You'll find him on other shows that I do on the BDL platform, and that's of course Mr. Mpiyake Dlamini, a analyst and researcher at the Free Market Foundation. Mpiyake, good morning to you, brother. How are you doing?
I'm good, Sihle, and how are you?
I'm good, man. Fantastic. Good to have you on the show. Now, Mpiyake, as I've set out to the listeners before the break, I wanted us to have about a 30-minute conversation. As we look at this issue of the lockdown, you know, we're currently at day 50 of this lockdown, and it does seem to appear that there are cracks appearing in it, particularly the more, government dictate slash, petty politics of it in particular. As I made mention before the break, and I want to get your view on it. The president appeared before the nation this week, and a lot of people are still scratching their heads as to exactly what, the president was trying to achieve in that. Because there wasn't any clear messaging around, hi, I'm the president, and this is what I'm announcing, and, you know, it's now up to you citizens to use this particular information. It doesn't seem like there's any information per se that was usable, but it did appear, and I want to get your view, it did appear that the president seemed a little apologetic for the conduct of the state, and he seemed to be on the back foot. Am I maybe misreading that? What's your view?
I think I tend to agree with you. There definitely does seem, he does seem to be under a lot of pressure. And I, as much as I sympathize and empathize with him for being under so much pressure, I mean, it's also self-inflicted because we don't need to be where we are. They could have communicated with citizens properly. They could have explained the regulations more rationally and justified them using the science that they are using, presumably to inform their decisions. So they could have done all of that and gotten all this pressure off of them. Because South Africans were broadly supportive of the lockdown, and so there was no reason at all to get into this point where South Africans have lost faith in the lockdown in the government, and they are directly challenging them through court action and through just disobeying the regulations.
Mm. I mean, just to support your view with the data, I mean, the Human Sciences Research Council, this was about 3 weeks or so back, quite early into the lockdown, actually came out with the findings of their research, and they showed that 99% of South Africans, at that point at least, had observed the government's request, you know, for people to hunker down and be under lockdown. So one can't say, for instance, as I've seen on social media, that no, you know, people had wanted to flout these rules anyway, and of course, South Africa being South Africa, there's the racial element that comes into it. Ah, you know, these white people didn't want to follow the rules anyway. I mean, government's own data show that this is simply not true.
Yeah, true, and it's quite amazing because, you know, people like me have been opposed to the lockdown from the very beginning, so I was among the 1%. But for me, it's quite amazing that government could be could let things deteriorate to this point to where they've actually flipped this around. And for me, it feels like there's more people who now don't support the lockdown than the people who used to support the lockdown. And so they've really squandered an opportunity for themselves and allowed people like me who've been skeptical of this to be proven right.
No, I would agree with that. And I think the skepticism was well placed because every decision that is made by the state, I always like to remind people, is backed up by violence or the threat of violence at the very least.
Yeah.
Therefore, it's very important that the decision-making of the state is always rational and always is in the favor of not only the citizenry, but their freedoms and their rights. So I think with the erosion of that latter element, the idea that decision-making is in the favor of people's liberty and rights, you've now seen the growing disobedience by people. And let's go into some of these, because I did put down some notes here, some of these examples of disobedience. Now, how I frame the show, as I said, there's a lot of social, and under that I include legal, pressure that the state is now facing, and of course economic pressure that they're facing to the politics of the lockdown. Here's a good example. We've had them on the show. In fact, I think you're part of the panel. Oh, no, Dumont, sorry, part of the panel.
Yeah.
An organization called Dear SA is set to challenge the nature of the regulations and the rationale for them. Let me throw in one more, because there will be a few that I bring in here, including your own organization, by the way, the Free Market Foundation.
Yeah.
But this week, the DA had threatened the Department of Trade and Industry Minister, Ibrahim Patel. You know, he initially had those regulations saying that e-commerce was not allowed. So you can't have things like, you know, take a lot or, you know, these deliveries online. And now he's capitulated to that. Again, the pressure from these particular interest groups is beginning to crack the politics and almost the tough talk by politicians. What is your reading of that, especially the e-commerce one?
Yes. No, the e-commerce one is actually a very interesting story because it sort of serves as a model for how we South Africans can get change in future. Because what actually happened, it wasn't the political parties who made the moves. Or DASA, the organization that you mentioned, initiated this process on the 8th of May of challenging government's regulations on e-commerce and gave them a deadline. They were exchanging letters back and forth, lawyers and so on. And then they gave them a deadline to respond to their action yesterday at 4:30 p.m. I think, if I'm not mistaken. And so, obviously, for me, it seems like government capitulated because they knew they had this deadline yesterday, and they knew that they couldn't justify these regulations due to the back and forth communication they had been having with the DSA's lawyers. And so this is, they just capitulated because, you know, such ordinary citizens put in the pressure. It was a volunteer driven effort. People were donating. It wasn't funded by, you know, like big corporates or anything like that, or a political party. It was just ordinary citizens. And the pressure worked because, you know, at the end of the day, people, like, you know, if people are willing to stand up and fight for their rights, they tend to win. As I'm already seeing already, like in terms of the people who are breaking the law, I mean, there's all of these court cases, including the Freedom Front Plus and so on, the people who are launching court cases. And this is good because we need more and more pressure on government. But on the other side of it, there's also pressure in the form of people breaking the law. I mean, just where I've been in Matateni, where I'm from, like people are cooking on the streets, people are selling their quarters, they are interacting, and I saw something funny on Twitter when someone said the township is either level 5 or level 1, there's no in between, and I think they are right. It seems so from what I've seen here. Yeah.
Absolutely, and you know, I chuckle because I think about what we were basically telling poor people in this country, who were also telling us that, guys, this thing is impractical. We have to live, and we understand the threats that come with the COVID. But before I get to any of that, and I think you've raised the most important pressure that the state has been facing, that has almost made the whole tough talk and the politics of the lockdown crumble completely, yeah, is the economic pressure and ordinary people saying, no, I'd rather take my chances and make my own decisions as long as I can look after myself and my family. You guys have been, when I say you guys, I mentioned the Free Market Foundation, have been, in my view, maybe at the forefront of this battle. Just this week, at the beginning of the week, I know you guys had joined with the Informal Traders Association here in Johannesburg. I don't know if you are fully aware of that. But you led a campaign basically showing just how damaging this lockdown has been to what I like to call other forgotten people. You know, the people who are informal traders, the poorest of our society. And you guys raised the point that decisions have been made about these individuals without their consultation at all. Do you want to maybe quickly talk to us about that, what that campaign was about?
Certainly, Sister. So this is part of also what I've been writing about as well, is that the fact that the government really didn't really consider some of the unintended consequences of its decision in deciding to implement this lockdown in the way that it did. So they could have been a better way to implement it. I don't know, like the people can argue about that. But so in doing the way they did, though, they didn't consider the fact that we have people like informal traders who rely on an open economy in South Africa. And so these people, like the poorest in South Africa, they need everyone else to be able to go to work and their income and be able to spend on the informal sector, because that's just how it works. And so this is the fact that they fail to do that, then is a big problem, because a lot of people are going hungry, obviously, and they are losing support politically because of that. I mean, just to quote something that Professor Shabir Madi, who is a vaccinologist and one of the experts responsible in South Africa's response to COVID-19. He said that for the first time, I think he said Baragwanath Hospital was experiencing admissions for malnourished children. So for the first time, they are seeing malnourished children being admitted in hospitals. It shows some of the effects that the Free Market Foundation was raising. I mean, people are facing starvation, and it's real, and I don't know. So this is so something needs to happen now. Like the economy needs to open up as much as is practically possible for those people.
I mean, that's crazy that you think about it. Hey, I mean, in a country like South Africa, a country really that is as wealthy as ours, including a state, by the way, which taxes that wealth quite generously in the name of helping the poor. That is that same government that literally propelled people to, to the point where they're appearing in our hospitals for malnourishment. I mean, it's a crazy, crazy, like, I actually want to take a moment to think about that. You know, because often when you think about malnutrition, you know, you think about the poorest of the poor of the countries around the world. But now we're talking about it in the context of South Africa. But I want to circle back, Mpiaki, because I think you raised an important point around the importance of an open economy to people like informal traders who literally take advantage of that and trade. There has been, and part of the anger from that particular group, among informal traders, is that the state has basically demanded that you can only be able to trade if you have a permit. Yes. Now, permits are not a new thing for them. You know, they do understand, whether you disagree with them or not, and I personally disagree with the idea of a permit, but that's another day, discussion for another day. But the state says, okay, fine. You want to trade under lockdown, you've got to have a permit. But availing those permits has almost been impossible for them. I don't know what you sort of garnered from them on that point. But I raise it because another organization, is SAKELEGA, the Afrikaans Business Organization, is set to challenge government on this particular issue of the permit regime. And I think that's going to be a massive case, in the courts. Do you want to maybe speak to us about this generally? Permits?
So permitting is something that's generally controlled by the municipality. I think there's an act that controls informal trade in South Africa. I think it's called, I forgot the name, but it has business in the name. It was passed in the 90s. And so permits are controlled by municipalities, and municipalities can also waive these permits. And so I've worked in Johannesburg with the same organization that the Free Market Foundation is working with now on this, challenging some of these regulations, the South African Traders and Retailers Alliance. And so we wrote a policy, responding to a policy proposal in Johannesburg before the lockdown, about how the permit process should be governed going forward. And what we basically said with that organization was that, look, if you want to have permitting for informal traders, you have to make it as simple as and non-arbitrary as possible. Because what happens now, because the officials, the Metro Corps and so on, have so much power, they have so much power to decide, it brings in an element of arbitrariness, which brings about bribes and so on. So, for example, to give you a practical example, they basically decide if someone is complying with the regulations. So if they find you on the streets, whether you're complying or not, if you're not willing to pay a bribe for those Metro Corps who are corrupt, if you're not willing to pay a bribe, then they simply take away your stuff and they say you don't comply with the permits. Because the regulations as they are written, they give too much discretion to the officer to decide or whether someone is complying or not, as opposed to having objective, clear, simple rules that everyone can see that they are complying with or not. So if an officer comes and says, oh, your stall is too dirty, I mean, this is almost a subjective judgment. It could be the adjacent stall that's dirty. It could just be ordinary pedestrian litter. And so we propose solutions around that, how you can make it more objective and more and less discretionary. And so this is still the problem today. The lockdown, the fact that we are under lockdown won't make this problem go away. People will still be asking for bribes, will still be applying the government action in an arbitrary way and discriminating against these people. And so it's even more critical now that you stop that, and you stop that by making sure that either you remove the permitting processes or you remove the arbitrariness from the permitting process.
And again, you know, just for the benefit of the listeners, we've got to understand, because sometimes it's very easy just to be dismissive of people. Oh, I'm an informal trader, blah, blah, blah. But these are real people behind these stories. Yeah. They're real people, you know, who are making an effort to just put bread on the table. I want to use one quick example before I go to my break. I've got just 1 minute. I don't know if you can remember a guy named Itumeleng Lekomanyane. He's known as the Sandwich King on social media.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Here's a dad who used, there was only 800 rand. See, he lost his job and there was only 800 rand between him and poverty. And what does this young man do, this entrepreneur? Uses that and starts a successful sandwich business. He sells sandwiches outside big corporates in Johannesburg and now rakes in about 20,000 rand a month to be able to provide for his family. So these are real stories, real people that we're talking about here. Bianca, let me ask you just to hold that thought. And when we come back, we're going to look at this issue as to now asking the question of why don't big corporates take on the state? And we're going to talk about the issue of corporatism and cronyism as we do that. So after the break, I'll continue my conversation with Mpiake Dlamini.
This is the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. I am your favorite Fat Boy BDL, and I'm in conversation with the Free Market Foundation's Mpiake Dlamini. Just before the break, I think we're getting some juicy bits of the conversation, which is essentially looking at what's been happening, the sort of social slash legal and economic pressure that's being mounted on the state in terms of pushing back against what is the politics of this lockdown. Not the aims of it, but rather the politics of the lockdown. So we've gone through, you know, the various interest groupings. Most of them are civil society and, of course, ordinary individuals on the streets who are beginning to say, no, this lockdown is just irrational. And it seems to serve another purpose other than for fighting COVID. And on that basis, there's been a growing amount of civil disobedience. But I want to raise an interesting difference, Biak, and I want us to sort of go full libertarian to an extent on this one, because, you know, people often get very angry with me when I say to them, I'm not pro-business, I'm pro-markets. And yes, there is a distinction between those two. And here's a great example of that distinction. British American Tobacco, South Africa, BATSA in short, had initially, and BATSA, by the way, is one of those major corporations in this country. They had initially said, okay, that's it, enough is enough. The president announces that cigarettes can go on sale, and then his ministers say, no, we're going to challenge the state. But then not more than a few days later, after their meetings with government, they then send out another press statement saying, no, I think we're going to back off because we're having quote-unquote engagements with the state, with politicians essentially. The question I want to pose here, are big corporates cowards? And really, why do you think they've been silent, Biak?
Yes. And so, because as they perceive it, I think in terms of how they judge their interests, they see this is the best as they can do, which is to align or not to oppose government too openly or too strongly. So this is, this will be true. I don't think they are cowards necessarily, because I think this will be true as long as they judge their interests as lying in that direction. As soon as they feel that their interests lie in opposing government in courts or whatever, I think they will simply change, because these people are operating on incentives. At the end of the day, they are doing what they think is best for their shareholders, even though it might not be good for us and our liberties. So if the state has as much power over the economy as our state has in South Africa, there is a benefit to following their dictates and not challenging them too openly, because they can punish you in so many ways. You have agencies like the Competition Commission, ICASA, and so on, which have shown in the past that they are willing to go after private companies that step out of line, and they have such broad powers that they can actually achieve this. So I understand where they're coming from, but I think it shows exactly the point, which is to say, we can't rely on these big companies. I mean, smaller companies have been much better at this. If you look at some of the things being said by ETM Analytics, a friend of ours who is one of the founders there, Doras Lambeti. So if you look at companies like that, they've actually been standing up against this the irrationality of the lockdown. And so the big corporates just are simply not willing to, because they are not as principled, I guess, because, you know, if you have to account to shareholders in multiple territories across the world and so on, maybe you can sort of say, okay, maybe they don't really have a choice here. So who knows? But it's disappointing nonetheless from someone who cares about liberty that they couldn't stand up and actually fight for their customers' rights to use their products.
I mean, that's the scary part, I think, for me. And I think you're right, and I was being purposefully facetious in saying, you know, they're cowards, but but I think the point you're making is an important one. The idea that it seems as though if it is beneficial to them, even despite us as their customer base, when it's beneficial to them to literally kowtow to the state, they'll do that. But now, here's my question, and you know, I'm going to be a little cheeky here, and I'm going to throw a curveball to you, and I want to see how you respond. Someone might then sit back and argue, rightly, that, oh, but hang on, are they not then being somewhat complicit in what is the growing and developing of an illicit black market?
Yes.
Let's look at the issue of alcohol, for example, and the issue of cigarettes and the harm, therefore, that market potentially places on individuals who are forced to use it. For example, there's been reports that a lot of these cigarettes, the quote unquote illicit cigarettes being sold, are more harmful in terms of their chemical makeup and the like and all that than the ones that are quote unquote regulated. Your thoughts on that?
So as much as I agree with the incentives that are pushing them towards this direction, I also think that, you know, we can provide other incentives as customers to push them in the other direction. So, for example, to give you a practical example, you have two organizations. You have the BETS SA, and then you also have FITA, which is the Fair Trade Independent Tobacco Association. So FITA has been challenging the government pretty strongly, and I think there's still a pending court case over, I don't know if you saw, like they had a court case in two parts against with the government. Part A of the application was relating to the rationale for the cigarette ban and where government, if government could provide the information. As I understand it, government finally relented and agreed to provide the information as to how they reached the decision. The second part of the application was to declare that the cigarette ban was not actually part of the regulations, so that it wasn't, so they want the court to declare that the cigarettes can continue being sold during the regulations. And so this is the, and so you have, as a customer, what you can do is simply buy from FITA companies, buy your cigarettes from FITA companies, make bets SAC that you are angry at their decision. So you can provide different incentives. As much as we can see what their incentives they're operating under are, as customers, we also have the power to apply incentives. It's not only the government. I mean, the government can only use force. We can actually withdraw our custom from them and deprive them of their profits.
I mean, I think you've made a cogent point there. Again, it speaks to that pressure that I mentioned, you know, the idea of the social slash legal and the economic pressure, and who can wield that power. It isn't just, you know, solely in the hands of the state. In the last 2 minutes, I know time always flies, especially on radio, but in the last sort of 2 minutes, let's look forward a bit and maybe let's pull out our crystal ball and try and prophesy here as to what may happen. There's all these interest groupings in South Africa that are beginning to apply pressure, obviously. I mean, for example, I didn't even mention AfriForum, who had initially had won in court over what was the effective internment of people in these disgusting conditions in these camps around the country. But anyway, looking forward, I'll give you the last word. What should South Africans do? Should they be supporting some of these initiatives? And what are some of the key issues you think we should be fighting for, other than just end the lockdown, which I think a lot of people are now saying?
Yes. There's a whole lot of things that we need to do in South Africa, made even worse by the fact that we have a lockdown now. These things have become more urgent. They're the kind of reforms we have to implement in South Africa. I mean, some of the consequences of the lockdown are things like the education school year has been cut short. And so we will have to think about how do we provide education that speaks to what's the best way to provide education and some of the things we've talked about in the past, like vouchers and so on. So the economic reforms that need to be done to take care of an even larger pool of unemployed people to make sure they get jobs and all of those economic problems. So those are what we need to do after the lockdown. But in terms of what's happening now, what you can do now, I think we should continue supporting organizations like the IRR, like the Free Market Foundation, like DS South Africa, who are actually fighting for our rights. I mean, it seems to me like everyone who cares about their liberty now is launching a court case. Everyone who can launch a court case is launching a court case. And everyone who can't launch a court case is simply disobeying the regulations. And this is good to see South Africans standing up for their liberty finally.
No, I agree. Bjarke, thank you very much. Bjarke Gamini, of course, is a researcher and analyst at the Free Market Foundation. Bjarke, how do we find you on your social media?
Unfortunately, I've been banned off Facebook since I started speaking out against this lockdown. But I'm sure there's no correlation there. So just Twitter for now, Turing_1991.
Excellent, brother. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. That's Mpiaki Kamini from the Free Market Foundation. After the break, we wrap up the show and look at what we can be looking forward to in the news week ahead.
Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
Yeah, well, yes, welcome back to the BDL show. I'm your favorite fat boy, Big Daddy Liberty. We just had a wonderful conversation with Mpiake Dlamini from the Free Market Foundation, another advocate for freedoms and liberty. And I think he's quite right. You know, we've got to support organizations that literally are standing and are in the fight, if you will, to preserve our freedoms and our rights as South Africans. That's how you continue to build and maintain, if you will, a free, prosperous, and property-earning society. These are very important issues that I want us to think about. As usual on the show, I will be looking at who the Moomish of the week is, the quote-unquote loser of the week. But before I get to that, there's two things that I would ask people to watch out for in the upcoming week or so, sorry, of headlines. The various challenges to the state are going to be important because they go beyond just this lockdown. I think South Africans are now at a point where their active participation in decision-making at the echelons of the state is becoming an important thing. People are realizing that you cannot just sit back and expect politicians to take a top-down approach with us. Democracy is an iterative, a two-way street, if you will. So that will be very interesting to watch this week as various organizations, DASA, as we mentioned, is one of them. The DA, I know, has threatened court action. The Freedom Front Plus is going to court. I know even the EFF have finally found their voice. They've been missing in action for quite a while. And although they're not going to courts, they're demanding the resumption of parliament, albeit arguing that parliament should be here in Pretoria. But I think that's just them playing their politics now. There is a necessary, the point being made, resumption of sanity, of citizens actually saying, hang on, we have the voice, we have the power. And that pressure, as I like to put it, pressure. That's what my rugby coach used to say to the forwards in a game. It's that pressure, if you will, that is basically making politicians quickly recognize and remember where the power lies. A colleague of mine, Dr. Franz Cronier, issued a wonderful scenarios plan where he looked at what the repercussions for this lockdown, for instance, will mean for the ANC at a political level. And that's a very interesting conversation, and I'm hoping I'll have him next week for him to share some of those insights. And Dr. Anthea Jeffrey also looked at the liberty question on the idea of an extended lockdown with this regulation. What does it actually really mean to you, the individual and your family? So I'm hoping we can maybe have her on the show at some point too. These are very important conversations, and you don't hear them anywhere else on quote-unquote mainstream media. And so that the slogan of the show really means what it means, which is, you know, we prosecute issues through the lens of liberty. So I hope you enjoyed the show. And I'm hoping, of course, that you're going to share it and tell all your friends about the BDL show. And, of course, follow me on social media and on YouTube, because that's where all my content really is. Now, I know you've been waiting for it, and the Moomish of the week is, and unfortunately has to go to him, the President of the Republic. What was his address this week? That was just the weirdest and non-specific message that was non-specific. I know that's kind of confusing, but so was the President's speech. So he definitely deserves Moomish of the Week in my book, because he cannot appear before a public and effectively say nothing to them, especially when the public is in fear at the moment as to what's happening and are uncertain of their own future. I mean, people are losing jobs. And for those who are, you know, in poorer parts of the country, you know, they're facing the specter of violence from the state, from the army and the police who march up and down our streets. So any government communication has to be clear and lucid and essentially advocate for our rights and our liberty. So there we go. Cyril Ramaphosa is the Moomish of the week. And on that bombshell, Let me say thank you very much for listening to the BDL show. Remember, you can support your favorite fat boy by finding me on any of my social media outlets. Just search at Big Daddy Liberty. Watch the show on YouTube by searching Big Daddy Liberty. This show will be podcast on my channel and on the Chai FM website. And remember, if you want to support me, you're more than welcome to do that by finding me on Patreon and other avenues. So guys, remember, I will be with you every Friday, 9 a.m. on Chai FM, and we'll be growing the BDL show as there's some really exciting stuff in the pipeline. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you next week on the Big Daddy Liberty Show.